Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station UCTV. I am your host, Kate Ariano, and here is the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. On Wednesday, Vice Provost Michael Bradford and Executive Assistant to the Office of the Provost, Amanda Pitts, hosted a virtual meet and greet with UConn students. Isabella Warren of The Daily Campus reports that students expressed their concerns about university costs and environmental impacts. Brianna Chance, a fifth semester fine arts major, said that a community housing program for low-income students would be beneficial to her and many students like her who find themselves facing homelessness and financial insecurity, yet still paying the same rates as other students do to remain in on-campus housing over breaks. She said, "We have no other option but to pay the housing rate, which many homeless students cannot afford, or we're back to sleeping on couches and in public areas." Warren reports that Bradford thanked Chance for her bravery to come forward and tell her story. Another student expressed the need for UConn to promote a vegan diet to make the school more environmentally friendly. It is Bradford's first year as vice provost, and he said he is looking forward to being able to explore students' new ideas for the school. To honor Breast Cancer Awareness Month, UConn Health has been awarded $50,000 to further its research on breast cancer. Amanda Killick reports for the Daily Campus that according to a press release, UConn Health received a grant from the Connecticut Breast Health Initiative, as did St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center, and the Hospital of Central Connecticut. The grant can now be used to further pursue UConn Health's research into their personalized 3D-printed breast forms project. This project would allow cancer patients who have had a mastectomy, a surgical removal of all or part of one or both breasts, to insert a 3D-printed prosthetic into their bra or swimsuit in place of an implantation, according to the press release. Food truck Lizzie's Curbside, a common stop for UConn students to grab some food between classes, has moved to the Nathan Hale Farm and Feed in Coventry, thanks to farm co-owners Carrie Ann Moore and Jeffrey Daniel. According to Olivia Hickey, reporting for UCTV, Lizzie's Cerealing can now temporarily be found on the Boston Turnpike, serving members of the community as well as visitors from UConn and the Coventry Farmers Market. While she's happy to be back in business after a brief pause at the beginning of the semester due to the pandemic, Hickey reports that Lizzie does miss feeding students during her usual UConn lunch rush. She said, "UConn was more on class breaks where this is people trickle in all day, but the business is different." Lizzie said she hopes to be back at UConn soon, according to Hickey. To wrap up this week's news, I've got a weather forecast for you folks in the Storrs and Mansfield area. The rest of today will unfortunately stay cloudy through mid-morning, but then we'll get a gradual clearing throughout the day with a high near 66. Tonight we'll have increasing clouds with a low near 60, and Saturday morning we'll see patchy fog before 9 a.m. But otherwise, a mostly cloudy day with a high near 66 and lows reaching 37 Saturday night. Sunday morning will be bright and sunny with a high near 52, and we'll finish out the weekend with a partly cloudy Sunday night with lows in the 40s. Now, as we move into our discussion segment of the show, please note that from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to two guests here on Husky Nation News, both vying for Connecticut's 2nd Congressional District House of Representatives seat. First, I'll be chatting with the current representative, Democratic candidate Joe Courtney, about his re-election campaign and why he feels he is the best person to continue representing Eastern Connecticut. Then later, Republican candidate Justin Anderson and I will be talking about his decision to run for the seat and what he thinks he can bring to the table as a fresh face for Connecticut. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. You know, coping with something that none of us have ever lived through before. But, you know, thank you for asking. I have my family's safe and healthy, and, we're doing our best to, work around the pandemic in terms of keeping the office, hitting all cylinders, and obviously on 24-hour standby right now to see whether or not we get another COVID relief package, which the Speaker Pelosi this morning said that she sees a clear path. So who knows? We may be in Washington next week voting.
Yeah, something that I know a lot of people are waiting for and waiting to see if we'll get more help. But, I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about your platform, about, how you've had an active role in helping Connecticut recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. And then I've got some other fun questions waiting for us at the end of the interview. So let's just jump right in. Why did you decide to run back in 2006 for this House of Representatives seat for District 2 in Connecticut? And have your motivations changed at all since running again and again since that year?
Great. Well, thank you. I mean, it's been a while since, I won by 83 votes, kind of the lore and legendary of the second district, which is known for close elections. And it's still every day I view it as a great honor to represent a part of Connecticut that my entire adult life, I've lived in. Obviously, some of you know, married, raised two kids. Was a small employer with a law practice in Vernon and served in the state legislature for four terms. I am passionate about, a number of issues which, were very uppermost in 2006 and remain that way today. I mean, I was chairman of the Public Health Committee when I was in the state legislature. We worked on a number of programs to expand access and cut costs for people's healthcare. That issue still persists today. And the vote for the Affordable Care Act still stands out as one of my hallmark, most probably significant moments in Congress, and obviously taking the steps to protect repeal in the wake of it. I do honestly believe this election, is going to propel Joe Biden into the White House, and it's certainly, I think, we're going to retain the majority in the House, and I think things are looking promising in the Senate, and it really will be an opportunity to take healthcare reform to the next level. And as a member of the Education and Labor Committee, we actually do have jurisdiction over healthcare with the Health and Pension Subcommittee, which I sit on. I'm very excited about the prospect that our committee will be right in the room, along with Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce, in terms of writing that new legislation. Being on that committee also, I think, has given me an opportunity to work on higher ed issues, which is my other subcommittee. And was in the room in 2013 when President Obama signed the Student Loan Certainty Act. I was the only representative from the House Democratic Caucus with the president that day, which again blocked an increase in Stafford student loan rates up to 6.8%. This year's rates are closer to 2.6%. That's the result of that law that the president signed that day. But we still, again, have huge work to do in terms of student loan debt and affordability, apprenticeship program reauthorization. I mean, there's a lot of very exciting ways that I think we can really give young people in Eastern Connecticut, which I care the most about, obviously, opportunities to get the skills to succeed to a higher degree and level.
Gotcha. So I know you mentioned a couple things that, you're pretty passionate about and things that you've championed for. But can you go into that a little bit more and talk about the issues that you find most important and things that you would continue to, advocate for if you are reelected to this position?
Sure. I mean, I still subscribe to the Bill Clinton, "It's the economy, stupid," sort of philosophy, which is that, Eastern Connecticut, which is about half the state's geography, is much more sort of working family, middle class than other parts of Connecticut, more small town and suburban. It's clear that, I think my constituency is full of incredibly hardworking people who are very focused in terms of bread and butter issues. And again, the two committees which I sit on, Armed Services and Education and Labor, it's no accident that I'm there. I mean, it's because I think the work that we do there is very connected to the district. So Armed Services, you know, which I've been on for 14 years. I now chair the Sea Power Subcommittee, which is the committee that has jurisdiction over Navy budgets and issues. Again, we did some research the last time anyone from Connecticut in the House had that gavel was 147 years ago, 1873. And, you know, that's a subcommittee which, again, for the lower part of the district in New London, Groton area is extremely important. We have the largest military installation in New England at the Groton subbase, about 10,000 sailors and officers and their families, populate that base. A shipyard, which has been around for 120 years, which when I first came into office was in a pretty steep decline. It had gone from 28,000 employees down to 7. We're back up to, in Groton, 12,000 workers. And the Quonset Point EB facility in Rhode Island, together the two of them are at about 17,000. Being on that subcommittee gives me the ability to, as I said, be in the room when the shipbuilding plan is being written. But there's also connections, to that work in terms of UConn. UConn's School of Engineering has developed an undersea innovation program, which again, we worked with the university to get funding for. The School of Engineering, which as you know, Kate, has been growing over the last few years. They have a very strong internship, paid internship down at the shipyard. And it's very exciting to see young people from UConn taking advantage of that job growth that's happening there. That committee, as well as the Ed and Labor Committee, which again has dealt with higher ed issues, which again, Connecticut's never gonna be a state that drills for oil or mines coal or grows large commodity crops. We're a state that's very much focused in terms of human capital. And again, the Education and Labor Committee is, again, the place where I think we're going to see some good work being done in the next Congress in terms of, opening the doors to college education, two-year degree programs, and apprenticeship programs, which I think really just is right in the sweet spot in Eastern Connecticut. COVID really quickly has really, and you know this better than anyone, really scrambled the normal operations of higher education institutions. The CARES Act did provide some funding for higher education, our input from UConn, Khan College, Mitchell College, community colleges, Eastern. I mean, there's no question that the drastic changes in terms of people on campus and what that means in terms of room and board revenue, state revenue. It's one of the really critical areas why we need to do another COVID relief bill. And the HEROES Act, which passed in the House twice, had very robust funding for higher education, which again is going to protect students from drastic tuition increases, as well as preserve normal operations, which the minute we get on the other side of this pandemic, we want to be really just ready to go in terms of getting campuses back to normal.
We're going to be taking a quick break, but right after, Joe will continue to talk about his election campaign for this 2020 election. We'll be right back.
1, 2, 3, 4. It's 91.7 WHUS.
Of course, and like you said, we here at UConn know that better than anybody. So you did touch a little bit on COVID, but can you go briefly into a little bit more the role that you've played in helping Connecticut recover from the pandemic, especially the effects that it's had on our economy and our society as a whole?
So the CARES Act, which was one of four COVID relief bills, again, has a lot of different buckets in, as far as assistance that was provided. And we're still seeing, even this week, examples of where the support is very focused in terms of trying to keep normal operations for key sectors. One is our agriculture sector in Eastern Connecticut, which is definitely the highest food producing part of the state. when COVID hit, schools shut down, restaurants closed, food in prices, farm prices crashed. I mean, the contraction in demand caused the price of milk, cheese, other dairy products, shellfish, which again, we've got a really, I think, exciting new shellfish growers growing sector down in Long Island Sound, same thing. And so CARES Act included funding for price supports. It's called the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, CFAP, as everybody in the ag sector calls it. Again, we pushed hard to make sure that dairy got a very strong infusion, which they did back in the spring, but shellfish growers were excluded. Even though if you went down and visited their operations, they're farmers. It's just that, you know, the food they grow, and they do literally grow it, planting the seedlings for oysters and shellfish is underwater. And that's really always been a real bias at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They don't consider that quote unquote farming. So myself and others have been, peppering USDA with, the facts in terms of, why that they should have been included in CFAP. And just a couple of days ago, I was with Governor Lamont and the Commissioner of Agriculture, Brian Hurlburt, announcing that actually USDA reversed their decision, and now the shellfish growers are going to get CARES Act funding. But our office has been mostly consumed with helping people with their individual payments, the $1,200. Again, a lot of people who file their taxes electronically and are pretty tech savvy, we're able to get their payments pretty quickly. But there's still a substantial number of people who do it by paper. Some people don't file taxes at all. That we've been working, and even to this morning, to try and make sure that they get those payments. Same is true for unemployment, PPP program, the small business lending program. FEMA funding for local communities that, again, have really been up against it in terms of, this unexpected work that they need to do, and school funding, K through 12.
So I want to talk a little bit about the fact that, you've got three other people running against you for this seat this year, Justin Anderson, Cassandra Martineau, and Dan Reel. Can you talk to me a little bit about what makes you the best candidate out of the four of you for this position?
So again, that's a normal, setup here in the second congressional district, which I welcome and I embrace it. And I we had a good debate on Winnie Radio the other day last night. Justin and I had a forum with the Eastern Connecticut Jewish Federation. And but I think, what I think I can bring to the table is, number one, a district office with amazing people who many of your listeners have interacted with and who have fielded a record number of calls over the last really 4 years since President Trump took office, in terms of dealing with both issues in Washington and here back home. And the COVID CARES Act demand was, again, something that, we've never seen, but my team actually really handled it extremely well. As someone in Washington who is now a senior member on the two committees that, again, I think will be extremely busy, particularly education and labor, we have a huge pent-up agenda, which I think, we're going to see move quickly with a new Congress.
So my next question for you is, do you have a role model in your life, or someone that you look up to, or someone that you idolize that maybe you haven't met, that you kind of use to lead you in the things that you do?
Again, I've got a few. Number one, I still look to my father and my mother. I mean, they were great parents who, the older I get, the more I appreciate, what they did for me. And my dad, was a Republican most of his life, which surprises some people when I tell that story. But, he was sort of an old-fashioned Eisenhower Republican, kind of moderate in all things. And, was a somebody who kind of gravitated more in the Democratic direction sort of later in life. But he was somebody who, you know, really was very civil and respectful of other people. And if you look at, you know, sort of my record, you know, in the State House, Connecticut Magazine did a poll of legislators, and I was ranked most conscientious, number one, and number two, Democrat, most admired by Republicans. Some of my Democratic friends get a little nervous, they hear that, but, you know, but the bottom line is, you know, I still, you know, somebody who is very passionate about, you know, what I think are a progressive agenda in terms of healthcare reform, education reform, but I do think that, you know, and I hear it all the time, is that people really are looking for public officials to conduct themselves in a way that, you know, really is respectful of constituents. And I think if you look at the crossover support I've had over the years in elections, there's no question that I think as much as I hear it from Republicans, you know, I really don't like your politics that much, but, you know, I like what you're doing on veterans issues, or I like what you're, you know, the way you handle yourself. So, you know, and my dad really, at the end of the day, I pretty much, you know, lay most of that intuitive approach to people that I think has meant a lot. I mean, and you know, as far as George Miller was the chairman of the Education and Labor Committee when I first got elected to Congress, he was an incredibly active, smart, results-oriented legislator. He's retired now. He you know, had a long career there. But I mean, if you go into the committee room, I mean, you will see, you know, just the whole wall, which is a huge wall, just plastered with legislation that George you know, was able to get through the process. And to me, that's always a good reminder that, you know, you're not there to you know, just spend your life on cable shows and sort of hear yourself talk. I mean, you know, it's about getting results. And again, George was an impeccable, you know, liberal Democrat, but he's somebody who could work with John Boehner when Boehner was the ranking member on that committee years ago. And I think he's somebody that I still, you know, think about and stay in touch with, by the way, after he left, as sort of an example. There's others, you know, I mean, Abe Lincoln is, from an historical standpoint, is still, you know, I think the most amazing person, the most interesting person, you know, that I think in our history. And, you know, again, brought a personal touch to his presidency, and obviously a moral clarity, you know, to end slavery, which I think is still by far, you know, the most, you know, fundamental accomplishment of any president in American history.
So I've got a rapid fire, few fun questions for you. So they're going to be really quick and just try to get the answer right off the top of your head. Are you ready?
These are the tough ones. Okay.
Okay, here we go. What is your favorite song?
Brown Eyed Girl.
What is your favorite season?
The one we're in right now, fall.
And hot chocolate or apple cider?
Apple cider.
Ooh, I agree. The last movie that you watched?
Actually, Castles in the Sky, which is a British film about the invention of radar, which it's a really actually fascinating story.
That's interesting. I'll have to add that to my watch list.
Yes.
Halloween or Thanksgiving?
It's on Amazon.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Halloween or Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving.
And last but not least, something off of your bucket list.
That I've already done or that I
that you want to do?
You know, I want to get to Spain and Barcelona. That's a part of Europe I've never visited, and I would love to get there.
Mm-hmm. I actually studied abroad in Spain this time last year, and wow. Let me tell you, it's incredible. You definitely want to get there.
Yeah, good. All right, well, now you make me, you know, prioritize it even more.
Perfect. Once all this is over, take that trip to Spain. All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much for coming on the show to talk to me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Kate. Thanks very much.
Okay, here I am talking to Justin Anderson, who is running for the U.S. House of Representatives seat for Connecticut's 2nd Congressional District. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. All right, let's jump right into it. So the first question I have for you, why did you decide to run for this House of Representatives seat?
The future is the important part of this. I joined the military 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, because I'm very patriotic. I come from a patriotic family. My two grandparents on my father's side are both U.S. Marines. I have a son right now who's 18 years old who's also a U.S. Marine. He just finished up with his basic and his advanced training. The bottom line is that same patriotism, you know, is carried over, and the concern for the future is carried over. 30 years ago, I joined the military because, you know, I want to ensure that, you know, we protect the future of America and the way America has become America, really. And there's a lot of ideology that is a part of that, and that's the same ideology as what made America great as it is right now, the great nation that we are. We have to continue it, and I see there's a lot of changes going on, especially in politics. There's a lot more divide, a lot more hatred, and this stuff bothers me, kind of scares me. I've got a 4-year-old daughter, so, you know, really this is all about her future. This is making sure that America, you know, stays the, you know, a great nation, because it truly is compared to what's going on in the rest of the world. And that's why I'm into politics right now. I truly believe right now the battlefront for the future of America, you know, before it was joining the military and having a gun and going off to a foreign land, I mean, right now it's right here. It's in politics.
What do you see as the most important issue that you want to address in Connecticut if you are elected to this position?
There's a lot of them based on just what's going on currently. One of them, definitely the idea of defunding the police. I'm pro-police. I just got endorsed by the Connecticut State Police Union. You have to have safety and security before we do anything. That's the number one job of the government, whether it's federal government, state, local. You have to have security for the prisons, for the people. So that's the most important aspect right there. And after that, we can worry about a lot of issues. And there's a lot of issues. Right now in Connecticut, the big issue is the economy. We have a bad economy. In the current administration, prior to COVID-19, most of America was doing well economically, with the exception of Connecticut. So we have to start looking at, in Connecticut, what do we do to make sure that, you know, we're creating jobs and not pushing manufacturing and businesses out of Connecticut? Because also prior to COVID-19, we had a mass exodus of people leaving Connecticut. Now, it turns out Connecticut and Vermont are two states that are considered contained, which means we are doing very well in terms of COVID-19. So that said, I think that has probably slowed down the rate of people leaving. But we have to remember, prior to COVID-19, business was being pushed out of Connecticut and people were leaving too. And as COVID-19 lifts or gets better, or we work our way through it, we got to make sure we don't go back to an area where business is not being helped or supported in Connecticut and people still want to leave. We don't want that to happen. We got to invite people into Connecticut.
So can you talk a little bit about, the response to COVID-19 in Connecticut? We are, doing pretty well as far as cases compared to the rest of the country. So can you talk a little bit about the response to that and your opinions and if you would have done anything differently?
That's tough. Connecticut, one of the reasons why I think they did well is we jumped on it really quickly as far as the military side. Now, I'm still in the National Guard. So one of the things that happened earlier on, like March timeframe, is Connecticut set up, through the National Guard and Air Guard, an entire group of people, myself being one of them, who responded to the PPE and the protective equipment that was needed at the lower levels. Now, how it works out is we have 5 emergency regions. We have 5 liaisons. I was one of them who worked in these 5 different regions to make sure that, the government and the military forces were working together to push out all the required equipment out to the municipalities, to the police force, the fire, all the first responders. And at one point we were pushing stuff out to the commercial business, so that, businesses could have access to the same PPE, free of cost. So this was an entire thing that was set up. It was pretty much a military operation. We had a huge warehouse that we set up in New Britain, Connecticut. And we had Air Guard guys that were actually pushing stuff out to what we call pods, which was, that's essentially where the municipalities could pick up the equipment. So I was very proud to be a part of that. And that, I think that response in Connecticut, played a large part in making sure the initial onset of COVID-19 was held at bay.
So the other thing that I noticed, just going through your website, learning more about you, is that you have a really extensive background in military and as in the correctional field as well. So you can you talk to me a little bit about that and how those experiences and those years of service and being in the corrections field are going to aid you if you are elected to this position?
In both fields, believe it or not, there's a lot of politics. When you look at the state level, what goes on within the state of Connecticut, there's a lot of state politics there. You know, but also at the state level, you know, from the Department of Corrections standpoint, I got to work with a lot of agencies, the state police. I got to work with federal agents, FBI, DEA. We did warrant sweeps. I was on what was called the Special Operations Group, which was the hostage rescue team for the state of Connecticut. So within that capacity, I was able to get outside of the facility and actually work with a lot of different agencies, you know, to help support Connecticut and help keep Connecticut safe and get people who, you know, have warrants out for their arrest, you know, get them back into a system where, you know, they're separated from the people that they, you know, trying to do harm to. So I was a part of that process, and that I think gave me a lot of insight into how a lot of state agencies function, how they work from the top down, from the administration down, all the way down to the frontline, you know, guy on the ground who's making things happen. Same thing in the military. I started off 8 years enlisted, and now I'm a lieutenant colonel in the military. So I've worked my way up from the bottom all the way to the top. I know every aspect of the military. You know, going on deployments, you literally have to set up every aspect you have in America, from, you know, mail to food or whatever, has to be set up in a foreign country. When you send a battalion out there, you have to, you know, encompass all that in a foreign land, in a place where, you know, we're actually at war and we're fighting people, because I'm a combat soldier, I'm an infantry guy. So I go to Afghanistan, I went there twice. You know, that's recreating essentially what we have in America and another land. So that those type of aspects, you know, from the bottom up, you know, looking at how things have to get done so everyone has, you know, all of the necessities that you need as a soldier in a foreign land.
Joe Courtney has been in this position. So what sets you apart from him, and why do you think that people should vote for you, even though he's been in this position for so long?
Well, because he's been in that position for so long. we need something fresh and new. Politics in Washington, D.C., and that's why I'm jumping right into the federal level, it's not working. It's not working for the people. There are too many politicians they'd rather fight each other. And what I see right now is, you know, one party literally, you know, not working with another party simply because they don't want the other party to have credit for doing something that is good and good for the people. And that has to stop. We've got to work together. We got to put us, you know, aside the partisan politics. Sometimes that's hard to do because we have different ideologies. But I think in Eastern Connecticut, the ideology aligns far more with myself than with Joe Courtney. I am not going to be on the legislative floor, you know, sitting there, you know, against Second Amendment rights. I am not going to back an Iranian deal, you know, which we know put $1.7 billion into the hands of the Iranians, which we know have killed U.S. soldiers. That'll never happen. At the federal level, there's a lot of issues. And that's why somebody like myself, who I've been on the ground, you know, I deployed four times after 9/11. I know what it's like to be on a soldier, and I know what it's like to risk my life in combat, and I'm willing to do that. But we need politicians who are really, they're going to sit back and they're going to understand the repercussions of the decisions they make when they put our children, our soldiers, our young men and women on the ground where they may lose their life. Those are huge decisions. I don't think anybody has the background, you know, other than myself. All that being said, I have to throw this out there. I've been having a lot of interaction with Joe Courtney. The reason why he's been at this job for a long time, at the local levels and the stuff that he does a lot of good stuff that I'm going to continue to do here in the state of Connecticut. He's actually a really good guy, and that kind of bothers me because, you know, I want to go aggressively against him. But I'll tell you what, Joe's a good guy, and there's a reason why he's been doing this for a long time. And he certainly, out of a lot of aspects, he has, you know, deserved the support that he's gotten from the state of Connecticut, from Eastern Connecticut. You know, he's backing veterans, which is very important to me. He's backing electric boat and contracting, which is also very important to me. So on a lot of levels, I got to give a lot of respect to Joe Courtney. But at the same time, at the national level, there's a lot of stuff. He's going to go down the party line, and where the party's going right now, I don't think Eastern Connecticut is ready for that. I don't think people want to see the police defunded, and I don't believe that we should be supporting like Iran or the Iranian deals, where we know that money goes towards terrorism, where we know it's killed U.S. soldiers. I have a lot of boundaries, and those are outside my boundaries.
Can you think of one or two of those things that, you know, he stood for, he's backed, that you are going to continue to do besides backing veterans, like you had just mentioned?
Yeah. Well, there's crumbling foundations is a huge issue in Eastern Connecticut, and he's definitely putting effort into that. I think more effort has to go, because if you look at the amount of money that's being allocated for this issue, this is going to be a very, very long, drawn-out issue. So we definitely need more money, you know, for crumbling foundations. One thing that I do like to see is, you know, the fact that he supports local farmers, because we have a big farming industry, you know, nationwide, and they can eke out the smaller farmer. That's something that's on Joe's radar. We just got through with the real estate meeting. That's another thing that's on Joe's radar, because, you know, people who are not just the people who can't afford rent, but the people who are renting that are not getting paid by the renters, you know, how do we support those people? So those are huge issues that I think both of us are concerned with. You know, definitely this is stuff that I'm gonna jump straight into and make sure that we have answers for these, you know, for the state of Connecticut. Another big issue too is on a shoreline, you know, our fishing industry has kind of dwindled. That's a local issue that I think is huge. And I'm gonna hop into that too. So there's a lot of small local issues that I think he's done well at. I think I can continue on, and I got a lot of drive. So, you know, my goal is not just to do what he's done for the state of Connecticut, it's to do it, you know, better, faster, and get more money into Connecticut. And one thing that hasn't happened is our economy has not been uplifted or picked up. I know he's gotten some grants, but we need major change in Connecticut to literally bring this business back to Connecticut, and that's what I'm gonna focus on.
So something that I noticed, you know, looking through your platform is that you really emphasize that good ideas can come from anywhere. So can you expand on that a little bit and talk about what that main message is supposed to mean to voters and to people who are listening?
Yeah, well, that goes back to what I'm saying about in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of stuff going on and there's a lot of infighting. When we look at, you know, COVID-19, there's a lot of stuff that has to be included into that bill or any additional assistance, but it can't be a free for all because we can't save our children or the future and then leave them in this huge amount of debt and straddle them fiscally. You can't do that. So these have to be taken, you know, at very measured steps and has to be very specific to, you know, securing and saving our economy and the people who support our economy who are getting hurt by COVID-19. So that's the important factor, but it can't be a free for all for everything. You know, I have certain, you know, ideology, which is, you know, how do we help the economy, help the people because of COVID-19, okay, but at the same time not pass on a huge expenditure, you know, for our children. And that's a measurement. And once you have the principle down, I don't care what idea the party comes from. You know, bring me the ideas, fit them into the principle to make it work. And the principle is the principle. Okay, don't pass on massive debt, but secure our economy for the people who are suffering through COVID-19. It's that simple. And all the factors that play into that, that make that work, regardless of who they come from, that's what we do.
So I also wanted to ask you, you know, a bit of fun questions, things that, you know, can speak to your personality and you as a person.
Sure.
So is there anybody in your life that you idolize or like a role model that you have? And can you talk about why?
A role model. I'll tell you what, my father passed away when he was 50 years old. I would have to say that he's left the biggest impact in my life. We grew up very, very, very poor. At one point, my parents had moved to San Francisco to be hippies, and they were living out of a van with my one-year-old sister, who was a couple years older than me. So I literally come from a family who was homeless, living out of a van as hippies, and here I am right now running for Congress. And the more important aspects of what my father left me is that, you know, really, you know, life is not about me. The harder things are for me, the more things that I have to go through in life, the more that builds my character. And I truly believe that. So it's not always about the current success or how well you're doing, maybe, you know, financially. It's more about the character of the person. And as long as you have that strong character, you know, money becomes far less meaningful. And that's an important factor. And like I said, my parents were never rich, but they left me very rich with morals and values and a character that allows me to, you know, support the country, to support the people around me, and think of others before I think about myself. And that all comes from my dad.
That's awesome. You know, that golden rule, making sure, you know, you're always thinking of others and supporting people when you can. Another fun little question I had is, do you have a favorite quote?
You know what, my high school quote in my yearbook was, "Does anybody remember Lasseter?" Which is from the live version of Stairway to Heaven, Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we lack, I think, you know, nowadays. Everything is so serious, there's so much divide. I'm actually a very humorous person, and I worry sometimes if I'm gonna get myself into trouble because I put everything into a humorous spin in my own mind as I look at the world, and I think I have to do that because sometimes things are just so crazy that if you can't take it with a grain of salt or if you can't laugh at some of the stuff, I mean, it's just not mentally healthy. So I think I'm in a mentally healthy state because I've got a sense of humor that just allows me to look at, you know, the stuff around me and not really let it bring me down, you know, so that's important. Yeah. I like that quote.
Especially in these times, you know, you gotta try and have some positivity and in a way that's gonna make it not look nearly as bad as it bad as it is.
And we need more laughter. We truly do, especially now more than ever.
Exactly. All right. So I've got a couple questions to rapid fire at you. Think, you know, right. Real quick. Sure. And yeah, they're just fun. Something to get the people to get to know you a little bit better. All right. Here we go. Your favorite song.
Ooh. All right. That's a tough one. you know, I'm very much into music. You know, right now, one that I really like is a Chosen One from a Black Label Society. That's a good song.
Your favorite season?
Fall. Fall is awesome. It's nice, cool, crisp air.
All right, hot chocolate or apple cider? I know that's a tough one.
Yeah, no, you know, I don't even know if I have I don't know if one favors the other. It really depends on the mood on that one. I don't think I have a favorite. I like them both.
All right, what's the last movie that you watched?
The last movie that I watched? You know, that's a good one. I've been campaigning for, you know, almost 20 months now. I can't remember sitting down to watch a full movie. You know, it's like 2 hours is a lot of time. You know, I sneak some TV in there, but, you know, and often it's news. I couldn't even tell you the last full-length movie that I watched.
What about a TV show?
TV shows. That's a good one. You know, I like Peaky Blinders. We were watching that. You know, we definitely need some more of that. A new one. It's kind of corny, but I enjoy it. Lucifer is kind of corny. The first few seasons.
Oh, I love Lucifer. That is one of my favorites. Oh my goodness.
That's definitely enjoyable to watch. So those are some good shows right there.
Gotcha. All right, Halloween or Thanksgiving?
Oh, you know, thanks. It's a tough one too.
candy or turkey?
The big thing is Thanksgiving. Actually, Thanksgiving has always been my favorite holiday overall. You know, because it's a family holiday, even more so than Christmas, because it's you don't have all the commercialization so much, and it's really sitting down with the family, having dinner, and just enjoying your family and the people around you. So Thanksgiving has always been my favorite. But, you know, right now I do have a 4-year-old daughter. So now I'm back into the swing of, you know, I love, you know, taking her out. It's a family event, you know, but, you know, with the little one. So, I have to say overall Thanksgiving, but just now for a short period of time, very close to, is going to be Halloween while she's enjoying, you know, learning about Halloween and you know, finding out about, you know, trick-or-treating and the costumes and all that stuff. That's a lot of fun.
All right, and the last one, what is something off of your bucket list?
My bucket list? Well, right now it's to get into Congress. I want to get in there. I want to get into politics. I want to jump into a big way. And, this is something that you know, it's I think for the future of America, you know, it's got to get done. We got to clean Congress up. There's a lot of legislation that I will probably be for, like term limits, that maybe a lot of politicians don't like. But the bottom line is right now, it can no longer be about politicians. It has to be about America. It has to be about people. And if I can get in there and play a part in that, I mean, that would be my bucket list right there. Because within that, there's a lot of stuff that I would love to be able to do for America. I'm very strong on, you know, foreign policy. There's a lot of stuff that really concerns me. And currently, my bucket list stuff is if I can get into Congress and really make an impact, there's a lot of impacts that would be in that bucket.
So, that's gotcha. It's a perfect one. All right. Well, that is all I have for you today. Thank you again so much for coming on the show and chatting with us. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Hey, thanks for your time. I appreciate you having me. I mean, this is actually a very good interview. Thank you so much.
If you are interested in learning more about either candidate, you can visit joecourtney.com and justinandersonforcongress.com. I'd like to thank both candidates once again for coming on the show today. Thank you to The Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. Thank you to Ethan Smith for our theme music and musicians MWIC and Admiral Bob for those background tunes. And thank you, listeners. I've been your host, Kate Ariano, and you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. I wish you all a fantastic weekend.